Good morning, church. Man, it's good to see y'all this week. We have had a busy week. It seems like everything is happening all at once, getting right here to the end of the school year. Easter was just a couple of weeks ago. Next week coming up, we've got Mother's Day. Today, of course, is Cinco de Mayo. I don't know what we're going to do. Oh, man. We didn't sing any Spanish songs, Tommy. I'm very disappointed. Anyway, we are thankful that you're here and hope that it has been a blessing to you as it's been a blessing to me thus far. I'm excited about this time in the kind of the development and the growth of the Forest Mill Church of Christ. Just to let you know, next week it's not only Mother's Day, but we're going to be making a big announcement. I'm excited about it. We're working on it and looking forward to sharing that with you next Sunday. So if you weren't planning on being here, now you have to be here. I think it's a big deal, and I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you. So we're going to continue our study through the Gospel of Mark. And up to this point, we've been studying along, we've seen a lot about Jesus, heard a lot about Jesus. We've seen Him work in miracles, right? Healing people, casting out demons, calming the storm, feeding thousands with just, you know, handfuls of food. It's been an amazing thing. The way He teaches and the way He talks is with authority. So we see that Jesus has got this power and this authority as He's teaching about the kingdom of God. Over and over again, Mark has taught us and told us stories that all point towards Jesus' power and authority. Jesus' power and authority. And there's no question, as we've come along now, there's no question that there's something really special and amazing about Jesus. That He thinks and that He acts in ways that are just totally confound everybody around Him. He leaves them in awe. He leaves them amazed. We might even use the word stupefied. Like, people can't wrap their minds around what Jesus is and what Jesus does. So Jesus is absolutely amazing. And there's no question that Jesus is doing something on purpose, like that He's working towards an end goal, that He has an agenda to accomplish. He has something to do, something to accomplish. But there is still a question out there. There's an enormous question, one that's been hanging out there about Jesus. And Mark told us, as the readers, the answer to this question in the very beginning. But in the stories, it hasn't come up. Hasn't come up at all. We don't know the answer to this question, and the strange thing is, and that Mark, no one asks. No one dares to ask. It's like people are afraid to ask. So finally, Jesus is going to ask the question Himself. Who am I? Nobody's asked who Jesus is. Isn't that weird? Nobody said, are you a prophet? Are you a rabbi? And then people have just kind of called Him by various names. The only one who came close was the Gentile woman who called Him Lord. But even that doesn't begin to approach all that Jesus is, right? So you get this question hanging out. We got this guy, he's got amazing power and amazing authority, that he's different than everybody else, and he's absolutely amazing, but we don't know who he is, don't know what he is. And when Jesus finally asks this question, we're going to get an answer. And with this question and answer, the entire Gospel of Mark is going to pivot. It is the hinge point for the entire book of Mark. We've been heading off in the direction of power and authority here this whole time. The power and authority of Jesus over demon possession and over health and over even death and the wind and the waves and over food. I mean, He's given straight power and authority time and again. All of a sudden, He asks, who am I? And with the answer, we start heading in this direction. A completely different direction that is going to wind its way down to Jesus' final destination. From this point on, Jesus' mission and His ministry are going to be singularly focused on one goal, the end goal. So if you have your Bibles and you want to follow along, we're in Mark chapter 8, beginning at verse 27. Jesus and His disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, He asked them, who do people say that I am? They replied, "Some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. And still others, one of the prophets. But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. "You are the Messiah," Peter says. "You are the Messiah." And as Peter, you have to understand, when Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" It's a plural question. Who do y'all say that I am? If Jesus were a Southerner. Who do y'all say that I am? And so when Peter speaks, it's always called Peter's kind of great confession, which it is. I mean, it's fantastic on Peter's part, but he's not just answering for himself. He's speaking, he's kind of becoming the spokesperson for the rest of the followers around him. "Who do y'all say that I am?" And he's like, "We think you're the Messiah," right? So he's speaking for the rest of the disciples, but in a way, for us as the readers, he's kind of speaking for us too. He's speaking for us that Jesus is the Messiah, the chosen one of God, sent to deliver God's people from their struggles, sent to deliver God's people from their enslavement, sent to deliver God's people from their oppression, right? And the confession was made at, we know, these villages around Caesarea Philippi. Now, Caesarea Philippi, obviously, with a name like that, it's got some links to Caesar, right? It was built by Philip the Tetrarch. It was kind of a small place, and Philip builds it up, and you want to curry favor with Caesar, so you name your cities after Caesar. Now, there was another Caesarea built by Herod the Great that was on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, but this was distinguished. This is a different Caesarea. This is the Caesarea Philippi. And this is in a more Gentile area. And it's Jesus' northernmost... And we see Jesus like all over the place, all over the map. If we got out, you know, a map and followed him, there's some general directions, but he's kind of all over the place. This is the northernmost place that Jesus goes to. After this point now, he's not going all over the place. He's not going to go back and forth and back and forth across the lake. From this point on, he's going to start working his way south. It's a little bit of a circuitous route, but he's going steadily south the entire time until he gets to Jerusalem. So again, the singular focus. From this point on, I'm not going over here and over there and over here and over there. From this point on, I am heading to one place, one destination, one end goal. I'm heading to Jerusalem. And so to our way of thinking, Jesus has kind of gone about this a really strange way, right? Isn't it strange that Jesus never told anyone who he was? I mean, isn't that strange? If you think about it, I meet people and they're like, "Hey, you know," and I'm saying, I'm Dustin. And they'll say, "You know, I'm Joe," or "I'm Lizzie," or "I'm whatever your name is." And, "Well, it's nice to meet you. What do you do?" "Well, I'm a preacher," or "I'm a school bus driver," depending on what day you catch me, or you know, and then they say, "You know, I'm in steel," or whatever they shouldn't say they steal, but you know what I'm saying. I'm in steel. I don't know who's in steel, but just pretend, right? They may just say, you kind of find out what people are, what they do, right? Or I'm a husband or a father, and I've got two kids, or I've been married for 20 years, or I was born and raised in Coffee County. You find out these things about them. They tell you who they are. Jesus never tells anybody who he is. He never does that, which is really, really strange for someone who's so important. If we were to meet the President of the United States and we didn't know who he was, for instance, we would expect him to say, "I'm the President of the United States." I've met some congressmen and even a senator one time, and they were quick to tell you, "This is who I am," right? "I'm somebody important. I'm doing something important." Jesus never tells anybody who he is. So that's really strange. He never announces his identity. He never announces his mission, what he's there to do. It's always kind of vague, right? That Jesus goes about it this way. And I think in that there's a lesson for us, because Jesus allows his actions and his teachings to speak for themselves. If you want to know who Jesus is, watch what he does. If you want to know who Jesus is, listen to the way he talks to people. Listen to the way he teaches. That's how you'll really know who Jesus is. I think that's a lesson that we as His followers would do well to learn in letting our actions and our words speak for themselves rather than announcing our intentions and missions. Here's why. Because this is totally counterintuitive. This makes no sense. Of course, it makes no sense that Jesus did it the way He did it. But whenever we say we're going to do something under the guise of Christianity, I'm going to do this because I'm a Christian, right? Or I'm going to place this symbol above my house. You know, I'm going to have a spotlight that shines across under the heavens. Or I'm going to do this under the name of the Forest Mill Church of Christ. Whenever we do something under the guise of Christianity or the Forest Mill Church of Christ or because of Jesus, whenever we do that, people come and they see it with a preconceived set of notions. They see, oh, this is just a Christian thing he does. And they may completely, because of that baggage, completely miss what we're actually doing. So if I help a family who's struggling, just say, for instance, that they're struggling financially or they're struggling with a job or whatever reason, they're struggling, and I come along, I'm like, oh, I'm going to help these people. And so I do so, and I do so because I'm a Christian, because of Jesus, or because of the Forest Mill Church of Christ. When I do that, people may come with the preconceived notion that he doesn't even really care about these people. He's just doing this so God will like him. You know what I'm saying? They may misunderstand. Now, that's not true. It may be that I have a genuine concern for these people, that I genuinely love them, that I am genuinely doing it because I care about them. But if they think I'm just doing it because I'm a Christian, they may think I don't care. They may misunderstand it. They may miss the action because of the baggage. And Jesus knows that. Jesus knows if He comes right out and tells people, I'm the Christ, they're going to think all the wrong things. Like He's doing amazing things, right? He's healing the sick. He's healing the blind and the lame and the deaf. And He's raising the dead. He's calming the storm. He's feeding thousands. He's doing all this amazing stuff. The people think, oh, He's doing this because He's the Messiah, right? If they think He's just doing this because He's the Christ, the Messiah, there we go, then they may miss it. They may think, oh, I know why Jesus is healing the sick and raising the dead and walking on water and all this. Jesus is doing all that so that people will follow Him. He'll raise up an army so that we can overthrow our invaders and be free. That's why the Christ is doing this. I get it. They'll completely miss what Jesus is doing because they already know. So Jesus lets His actions speak for themselves. And as Christians, the way that you treat the people that you work with, the way that you treat your neighbor, the way that you talk to the people you interact with, let that be strong enough to stand on its own. If you have customers, and a lot of you are in service industries or in retail, treat your customers and the people that you serve, treat them with such dignity and honor and respect and love that your actions and your words are strong enough to stand on their own. If you're if you're a teacher, or if you work at a plant, or if you are in finance or any number of things, treat the people you work with in such a way, not because you're a Christian or because you're a part of the Forest Mill Church of Christ or because of it, you just do it to them and let them figure that out. They need to figure that out for themselves. You don't need to tell them. They need to see it for themselves and come to understand. Then maybe they'll really understand what it means to be a Christian. Maybe they'll really understand what Jesus was about. Maybe they'll really understand what the Forest Mill Church is about because of the way you have treated them and the way you have spoken to them. So in our culture, most everyone would be pretty comfortable referring to Jesus as the Christ. We think it's His last name, right? We call Him Jesus Christ all the time. Everybody knows that Jesus is the Christ, but think about it. It's only a really few people who have any idea what that second name means. Only a very few people know that. So even now, Peter is rightly confessing that Jesus is the Messiah, that Jesus is the Christ, and then Jesus tells him, no, you don't tell anybody about that, right? Keep that quiet. Because even Jesus' closest followers, the people who know him better than anyone else in the entire world, even Jesus' closest followers have no idea what that means. They have no idea what it means for Jesus to be the Messiah. Just like in our culture, people don't know what it means for Jesus to be the Christ. So now, Jesus has got this new task, this new direction. Now, instead of showing them my power and my authority, because now they know I'm something different, I now have to teach them and show them what it means to be the Messiah, what it means to be the Christ. And he sets about that immediately. And Mark arranges these stories very methodically all the way back in chapter 8. But especially here at the end, we get the man who was blind, and Jesus touched him twice to heal him. The dozen of you who were here last week, you remember that story. And then this week, we get the confession of Jesus as Christ, and it's followed up by this interesting little story. It says, he then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. And he was speaking the word to them plainly. That's literally what the text says, speaking the word to them plainly. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. "Get behind me, Satan," he said. "You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." So for the very, very first time, Jesus began speaking the word to them plainly. He's been teaching the word all along, but it's been sort of veiled, sort of hidden, sort of roundabout way, right? He's sort of doing it, and now he's doing it openly and clearly. And when he does this, when he reveals who he is and what he's about, we understand just how wrong Peter was. Now, Peter was right. Peter was made the right confession that Jesus is the Son of God, that He is the Christ, that He is the Messiah. It's true. That part of the confession is true. But it also reveals how Peter's partially blind, like that blind man we just saw. He was touched once, saw the people walking around like trees, couldn't figure it out, had to be touched again to see better. Peter's like that in-between state. He sees that Jesus is the Christ. I get the vague idea there's people over there. I get the vague idea there's a Messiah over there, but I don't know exactly what that means. And so now Jesus has to teach him. Yes, Jesus is the Messiah, but he's not an earthly king sort of Messiah. He's not a military leader sort of Messiah. Jesus is the suffering Messiah. That's exactly what Jesus calls himself, that he was going to have to suffer. And this idea of the Messiah being a sufferer is so offensive to Jesus' followers that Peter is sort of, again, booted out front to be the spokesman again. I can almost picture them pushing Peter in the back. It's like, "You got to say something about this." And they sort of push him out to Jesus. So he's like, "Jesus, come on over here." And he pulls him aside. It's like, "You can't be saying this stuff. People are going to misunderstand what you mean." And Jesus is like, "I think they already have misunderstood what I meant, because I'm being plain and I'm being open." And Peter rebukes Jesus because he's like, the Messiah is not supposed to be rejected and killed and suffered. The Messiah is not supposed to do that. He's supposed to lead us to victory. That's what the Messiah is supposed to do. Don't you know that, Jesus? Now, Israel had been occupied at this point about 100 years. They'd been under some form of occupation, some form of domination for about 100 years. But before that, from 163 BC to about 60 BC, so about 100 years before that, they were free. They'd been under really nobody's rule. It was rough, kind of Greek, but there was no military occupation. There was nothing. And they could kind of do what they want, set it up how they want, act the way they wanted. And they had this brief taste of freedom for 100 years. That was really brief to them. 100 years of freedom, and this freedom whetted their appetite for more. They longed to be a sovereign state under the Messiah, where Israel could worship God freely without any hindrance from the pagan nations, without anybody telling them what they could do and what they couldn't do. And so from a human's perspective, The only way to get that, the only way to get this freedom back is to have a military campaign. That's the only way we're going to get the freedom we need to worship God the way we need to worship God. Does this sound familiar to anybody? So they looked to Jesus to be a military leader because that's what they needed. They needed freedom to worship God. So Peter casts all of these preconceived notions onto Jesus. He needs to correct Jesus so that Jesus will rightly understand what the Messiah is. And the word used here is rebuke. It's a really strong word. Remember, Jesus spoke earlier to the demons. He rebuked the demons. Same word. The wind and the waves that were kind of out of control. It was the picture of chaos, like creation spinning apart. And Jesus rebukes the wind and the waves. He puts them in the right place. And the word rebuke, you don't rebuke someone who's over you. I don't know if you've ever tried that. It's a bad idea. You have to be the one in authority to rebuke someone else. If you don't believe me, next time you get pulled over, policeman, get on to him. Or tell your boss what they're doing wrong. Right? Peter rebukes Jesus. And they're over here to the side. Jesus turns around and he looks at the rest of them almost as if to say, "You are y'all behind this too?" But he has to put Peter back in his place. So he says, "Peter, you're not the leader. You're not the one in charge. Fall in line. Get behind me. Because you think you're right. You think you understand what it means to be Messiah. But you are so wrong at this point that you aren't even representing the right side. You're representing the opposition. You're so wrong about what it means to be the Messiah that you're representing Satan, right? You're not the leader here, so you just need to get back in line." And I've always thought, boy, what a dolt Peter is, thinking he can get onto Jesus. But before we judge Peter too harshly, we need to stop about and think about what it means to follow the Messiah in our context. Because sometimes we can be wrong too. Peter's ideas about what it means to follow Jesus aren't really that different from a lot of people's idea of what it means to follow Jesus today. I was somewhere that a television set was on, not my house. I was out in a public kind of area. And on the TV was this Christian broadcast news type program, and it was on, and I wasn't really paying attention. I don't generally watch that sort of programming very often, but it was on, and I was kind of waiting. I was killing a little bit of time, and I noticed they're speaking on this Christian newsish broadcast. They're talking about Venezuela. Now, if you don't know, haven't been following Venezuela in the news, there's a lot of opinions about Venezuela, but long story short, they've had a strong socialist economy, oil prices plummeted, and they've fallen apart. They've had this military dictatorship. It's been terrible. People have been fleeing the country. It's a bad deal. People are starving. It's terrible. So this broadcast, this Christian program, starts advocating that we need to send weapons down to Venezuela. And I had to stop and I had to think about that. He's like, "Now, we don't need to send soldiers, but we do need to send," speaking about our government, not Christians. I don't know what he thinks the difference is. "But we need to send weapons down there." And I'm thinking, this is a Christian program. You are speaking for Jesus here. Would Jesus encourage us to send weapons to kill those people that we disagree with politically? I mean, even when we vehemently disagree with someone. Would Jesus advocate sending weapons to kill people that we disagree with? Well, just look what he told his disciples. Didn't you remember that time he told his disciples, "Everybody get a sword. We got to get rid of these Roman oppressors so that we can all worship God the way we're supposed to." Remember the time he said, I don't remember that either. Would Jesus advocate or argue that the only way for Christianity to really triumph was going to be through military victory? For that matter, would Jesus argue that Christian success has to be through capitalism or has to be through democracy? Or would he argue that Christian success had to involve large bank accounts or good health? Would Jesus argue that's what I mean when I'm talking about Christianity? Military victory. The Jesus we see in Mark's gospel, and Mark spells this out in living, vivid colors, that this Jesus, this Messiah, teaches service instead of domination. This Jesus, this Messiah, teaches sacrifice instead of conquest. This Jesus, this Messiah, says that's how true salvation is going to be achieved, not through military victory, not through strong-arming your opponents, not through having the most power, not through having the most money, not through having the most followers, not through being in power in government, not through any other means. If you want to do those things, that's great. You go do those things, but that has nothing to do with true salvation, because you can have all those people and lose souls to Satan. That does not equal success in Jesus' book. Success in Jesus' book, as He defines it, is laying down your life for humanity. Success, as Jesus defines it, is giving your life for the sake of the world. If you want to follow this Jesus, that's what it's looked like. And it's only in learning this truth about Jesus that Peter's confession is made right. Because Peter can say Jesus is the Messiah. You and I can say Jesus is the Christ all day, every day. And that means absolutely nothing. Or worse yet, it means the wrong thing until we understand who this Jesus is. We can say we're following Jesus time and again, but until we're following this Jesus, we're following the wrong Jesus. If your Jesus is about power and domination, you might be following someone besides this Jesus. If the Jesus you're following is about political and military success, you might be following the wrong Jesus. If the Jesus you're following tells you you have to be healthy and rich, you might be following the wrong Jesus. This Jesus calls for us to lay down our lives. And that's the very next teaching we're going to get into. I hate to stomp all over that for next week. But I want to let you know that we're going to try to dig into that a little bit more, what it means to follow a sacrificial Messiah. And my prayer for us as a congregation, for us as individuals, is that we learn to see Jesus for who He is, to learn what it means for Him to be Messiah, so that when we follow Him, we're following a Jesus that the world's uncomfortable with. That we're following a Jesus that unsettles those around us and yet allows them to see the love of God living in and coming out through us. And if you need prayers or encouragement for forgiveness, if you're ready to become a follower of this Jesus, to put on this Jesus in baptism and have your sins washed away, to become a child of God, we want you to know if you have any needs this morning we can help you with, we want you to come now as you stand and as we sing.
Bring Christ your broken life, so marvelous.